You know, this switch from Under Armour to Nike that's coming has really got me thinking this is a great opportunity to change up the uniforms a little bit. And I want to hear what you guys think, because my one request, give me the throwback Bo Jackson baby blue.
Yeah, I mean, I like the baby blue, sure. I like an orange. I think with a baseball team, you play so many games. Mm-hmm. Let's have a lot of different and I used to not feel that way. I used to be like, you have a road jersey and a home jersey, and that's all. But I've mellowed out a little bit on that throughout the year. So yeah, give me a bunch of different things. Sonny, how about you?
Sonny, y'all ever give the starter a hard time when he picked a jersey you didn't want to wear?
Not really. I mean, because I myself like Under Armour. But obviously, after playing in Nike the past few years with Pro Ball, I've started to Nike started to grow on me. So Nike's more, it fits a mannequin. I'm not really your mannequin physique. So the Under Armour was a little more it was a little more friendly. But I think something cool that they did with the Under Armour with the all navies, that might have been like a tryout, I'd say, for a jersey. So maybe with Nike we could see an all baby blue, or even like an all orange or something. But I'd really like to see a pinstripe, a full pinstripe with even maybe a pinstripe vest. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I do like the vested look. Mm-hmm. And they broke it out. I feel like a couple of years ago, they might have broken it out for one throwback game, or maybe not. Maybe we're just talking about it in the booth. But I would like to see look, there's some pretty good teams in the 90s that played with those vested uniforms. And so that'd be kind of a neat throwback. How do y'all feel about the all blue? Can I just throw that out at you?
The Navy or...
The Navy.
I don't know. It's a unique look. I think it's just because I've never seen a Navy on Navy. Like I like it too. Like I like a black on black, a red on red, orange on orange. So I mean, I think just seeing a Navy on Navy was just kind of like, I've never seen that before, but I like it. I mean, it's not hideous.
It almost feels like a football uniform more so than a baseball uniform. Cause again, you're just not used to seeing Navy on Navy, but
yeah.
What a way to start, folks. This is the Barn Baseball Show, Episode 3. Lindsey Crosby joined by Village Vice's Brad Law, professional baseball player Sonny DeShera, if he hasn't already made that point in the show. And guys, I find it really odd that we've gone 2 episodes of this show and we've not talked about Ike Irish. Like, Cooper McMurray mentioned him, but we haven't discussed that. So that's what I want to do today. I want to break into some of these position groups, talk about these guys in detail, who should play where, what we're thinking about, and all of that stuff. And I mentioned Ike. I'm actually not going to start with Ike, because I think one of the biggest things that I've heard from players, we talk to a couple players every week as media availabilities. I'm not Sonny there every day with all these guys. But everybody's mentioned the infield defense. Everybody's mentioned having 3 shortstops on the field at any given time. So one, kind of underrating Cooper's ability a little bit by not saying 4 shortstops. But do you think it really matters where Auburn even puts these guys? Or is it just find the 3 best hitters because everybody's clearing a base level of defensive excellence?
With just kind of how when I played here, seeing how it works and how Gabe likes to do things in the past few years, the best thing I can say about these guys and the guys I've worked on the infield with is, yeah, that is very true. It's going to honestly depend on who can hit, because there's too many guys that can hit. And, you know, Coach Nonemaker does a phenomenal job. I mean, he turned me into a mediocre fielder into what, you know, I was holding my own now. So,
yeah,
just seeing that year after year, how Nani does with those guys, and the fact that, I mean, it's a good problem to have. You got 7 dudes who could possibly fill in if, you know, one guy needs a break, because they're the one guy's struggling a little bit. And that's a very good problem to have.
Yeah, I think it does matter. I think you would love to have guys that play, you know, 80% of the games mm-hmm. on your schedule at the same position. And if those are players with experience, I mean, if a freshman fights through that and is able to make his way in and be productive, then that's better, then your team is better for it. But I think when you look at this lineup, if you start up the middle and you start with Ike behind the plate and you start with Eric Snow at short mm-hmm. and you start with Derek Fabian at second, Butch talks about Derek's demeanor and being a coach on the field. and second year in the program, mm-hmm. making the guy on either side of him better on the field. I think that's valuable, especially early in the season, and especially when you have, you know, Snow, who's new to your team, Eric Gavar at third, who's healthy for the first time. I mean, you know, starting a season ready to go in a starting spot. I think having guys like that are important. And then, you know, when you go to center field and talk about those guys, whether it's Bristol Carter or Cade Ballou, whoever ultimately gets that nod, I think where you start is up the middle defensively. I think that can be a strength for this team.
Yeah. Snow feels like the guy who is locked in the most, like of everybody, just kind of given his history, given how good he's been defensively in his career so far, transferring in. He feels like if there's anybody you're going to say that is the guy that is on the field for 80% of your plays, if not more, it's Snow. And then Guevara, I talked to him last week, or actually, no, sorry, I talked to him like Tuesday. He said he's mostly played third this spring. Fabian's the wild card to me because I do like, you know, to Butch's point, he's been second year in the program, coach on the field, but I feel like he's the one who's going to be asked to move around if anybody misses time. And like, who's the loser in that situation? Like, who is a guy that should be starting for most SEC programs that's going to start off on the bench for us?
It's definitely the younger guys, because, I mean, you get with Snow and Fabian, you could interchange them out every day if you wanted to, really. They can both play a solid short and second, and they both play hard. I love, especially Derek, man. I really love how Derek plays, and I get to talk to Derek and Coop and Ike most, and just talking with those guys. I think with those three kind of headlining and leading the team, I think they kind of show whoever wants to step up and be great and, you know, do the job. That's kind of the vibe from them and that they give off. And so I think everybody's kind of feeding into that.
Yeah, it helps to be versatile. I mean, I think about Cole Foster, who played with you, Sonny. He came in, played second first year, shortstop the next year, kind of followed the Ryan Bliss formula, started second, go to short. He could play some third if he needed to. Derek can play some third. He can play some short. He can play some second. May have done all three at various points last season. So, I personally like the veteran guys on the field early in the year. And then if you have an Addison Klepsch or a, you know, Chris Rimbert playing on the infield at second base, or like a Lucas Steele, a guy who may have a future behind the plate, but he can play some third base if needed. If you need a, you know, real heavy offensive lineup and want to get him in there, he might could play some third base.
Kind of went and pulled. Fabian's played, according to Baseball Reference, right? Because that's where they had this stuff. Fabian played 39 games at third last year and 11 at second, and with one at short. But in his career, going back to Florida, he's played first as well. He played left field. He's that classic, like, he's a ball player, right? You can just stick him anywhere on the field. I feel like every good team has one or two dudes that you can literally, they can go to any spot that involves a glove and can be at least above average. And Fabian's probably that guy here for Auburn. But like, is it worth locking that guy into a spot every day? Or is it better to leave him as that floater who can go anywhere? Like, that's the give and take here you have to figure out.
Yeah, I think his everyday presence is going to be required, you know, up the middle. But I think if something were to happen and they were like, hey man, like you gotta help us out over here, he would no question be like, okay. Like he just wants to win. I know Derek just wants to win, man.
Yeah. Sonny, let me ask you about the grind of a season. I mean, for you guys, it's what you want to do. And I know Butch mentions that if you're gonna play professionally, the grind is a whole lot more than it is in college. But there have been a lot of times over the last 5-6 years calling these games where we get into a midweek situation. And I expect there to be some starters who sit out, and they don't. They don't get a night out. Is that a function of guys embracing the schedule? And, well, this is what it is. Why would I want – I only have so many chances to play. I want to play. Is that the genesis of it, or is it just that, look, you know, coaches make the lineup out, and they got me in there, so I'm going to go?
I think it's more of because midweeks, I mean, like, you know, you could be playing a lower tier team, and it's like, oh, you know, we should be able to kill them. But in college, every single game matters. So like, if you lose that, like we lost to Jacksonville State in 2022 at home, and so that really almost kept us out of hosting. Like it's games where like it's just every single one matters, and so everybody understands that. And so if a guy who's starting every day is like, hey, why am I not playing? What's going on? It's either just to truly give them a rest, or you know, so maybe something else. But no, everybody wants to play every day. That's for sure.
Yeah, I asked that question because I think the natural tendency maybe for a fan to look at the schedule and say, all right, well, a midweek game against, I don't want to disrespect particular opponents, but just, you know, the fan can look at the schedule and pick a team here or there and go, well, maybe this is a game for the freshmen to play. And, you know, maybe Fabian's not, like, if you have five or six guys who could rotate on those infield positions, where do you work them in? The first thought of a fan is maybe to do that on those midweek games, but it's maybe not as easy as just use those to plug in young talent. Sometimes young talent just has to wait. And if the number's called, then you step up.
Yeah. I mean, both the places I've been at, even at Sanford and at Auburn, because Gabe is really good about giving those guys a chance, like just at least maybe get them a pinch hit, get them a spot start on a Sunday or something early on, just to see, you know, who's ready and who's not. And I really respect both the coaches I played for. They do that. They that's what happened to me my freshman year. I got a shot, and you know, I kind of took off and ran with it. And there could be that freshman that does that this year. You never know. But that's why you do it, in my opinion.
And I do think this year the midweek schedule probably isn't as full of pushovers, for lack of a better word, than usual. I mean,
that's a good point.
You go to two Georgia Tech. Troy's a top 25 team in the preseason. You know, UAB's nothing to slouch at. Those in-state schools somehow, like, they always bring their A game whenever they play Auburn, whether it's a in Auburn, it's in a minor league park, things like that. So I feel like this is a year where you're going to see a lot of those veterans in the infield playing a lot, simply because this is one of the tougher schedules I feel like I've seen in a while at Auburn. Sonny, did you guys get the schedule and ever kind of say, like, hey, we don't really get a break, this is tough? Or is it you knew this was going to be tough? It's just a question of how tough is this going to be?
Yeah, it's almost like you get this schedule, you're like, oh, look at – like, I think we had a stretch in 22 when I was there. We went – I think we were Vandy at home and then on the road at A&M and then back at home against, I mean, maybe Arkansas, and then on the road at Tennessee. It was something like that within 5 weeks. And I was like, we're playing four top – 15 teams in 5 weeks. So it's just kind of like looking at it, but that's why you want to play in the SEC. You know, that's why you want to go. I was on the other side whenever we play the in-state Alabama and Auburn, because being on that side, you're like, oh yeah, we want to show them that we can play and we want to beat the brains out of them. And then going to Auburn, it's like, we should never lose to these guys. Come on. Which is true. if they do what they're supposed to and we, you know, play how we're supposed to play, it shouldn't be close. But that midweek thought can just get to you because you got one team who wants to kill you and you got the other side who's like, they shouldn't beat us.
And I think my take home message from this part of the discussion is those midweek games are not for experimenting. Mm-mm. They are very, very important and you need to win them. They're important for postseason, for where you're going to play postseason games. So even if you have a wealth of young talent, that's not the time to experiment.
And the good news is a lot of these veterans have versatility, and I think like that extends to the catchers. I can't remember a group of catchers at a school that could play as many other positions besides catcher as this group. Obviously, Ike Irish is, you know, your projected first round draft pick. I think they named him first team all SEC in the coaches poll and things like that.
Yeah,
he's played first base, he's played right field. He spent a lot of his freshman year as DH. Lucas Steele from Samford, the transfer, he's played corner infield. I think he's played a little bit of corner outfield as well. Mm-hmm. Frelick has experience in the infield corners. And then Cale Strickland's the only guy who's really locked in like behind the plate, but I think he's also probably the best defender of the four. Yeah. Sonny, I know Butch likes to have really good defenders, especially behind the plate, really strong arms. Can you remember just in your time, whether it was Samford, Auburn, whatever, seeing a stronger group of catchers on one roster and more versatile group of catchers than probably what Auburn has this year?
Yes. I mean, what they have this year is very rare. You got four dudes who could fill in and do fine. Like, so I guess three behind Ike. You got like Steele. Obviously, he's caught his whole life. I've known Steele my whole life as well. And so just watching him, and he can handle the game. Frehlich can handle the game. And Strickland is, like you said, probably one of the best defenders out of the four and three. And so I think that's a very unique problem, because at Samford we had, you know, we had our starting catcher, and then we had our other catcher who they were very, very close and very the same, where if, you know, if one guy was playing and one guy wasn't, you didn't really miss a beat. It was the same thing. And so obviously, and when I played in 22, we had Nate with Jake Wyant and also Dial in there too. So this is very rare to have four guys who can fill it in and play it.
It's interesting to me to see this much talent and versatility behind the plate, because I wonder how many games Ike is gonna catch this year. Like, do you construct this group in order to give him fewer games behind the plate, or just to beef up your insurance policy if he deals with injuries or you know, any other type of situation this year? I mean, that's a very good question. His future is behind the plate, and so you want to give him the games, but there's a clear benefit to having him focus on not calling a game, not receiving, not being behind the plate for 3 hours, and maintaining what he can do behind the plate. So I'm fascinated to see this wealth of talent behind the plate. Does that mean fewer games for Ike starting at catcher?
What because last year he what do you think he was on, like three on, four off, or he'd catch three in a row and then the fourth one he'd DH or play an outfield or something?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to see, like a 75-80% behind the plate, and which is good, because obviously, one, you don't want your best player getting tired, and two, these other guys can just fill in and you won't miss a beat.
Yeah
the way I deal physically.
Yes
back there is tough, and I know, you know, covering MLB kind of like I do, one of the big things a lot of teams go with is that day game after a night game. They don't want the same catcher back there on the short turnaround. So obviously doubleheaders, it makes sense to have a different guy, but then you're going to see that Sunday afternoon game. Those games are now, I think 2 o'clock is the start time for those. They play till 9 p.m. on Friday.
Yeah.
I think at best it'll be a DH day. Maybe it may be an outfield day for Ike, depending on how he feels. And then that's something where Strickland gets to start behind the plate and Steele rotates in, because I think Strickland still has a little bit of offensive questions. Last year in the conference, I think he hit about 231. And so you feel good about if you need to pinch hit for him, right? You have another catcher you can put in. Frehlich feels like he could potentially, if there's no injuries in this group, he might end up being a redshirt candidate. I don't know if they've changed it like football where you can still play a little bit in redshirt, but it feels like it's tough to get all four guys in, and the youngest one is probably the one that ends up being left out if everything goes according to plan.
Yeah.
Steele is an interesting, I think, variable in the second half of games when you get into teams' bullpens. He's a switch hitter, has really good power, could really do some damage, you know, coming in a pinch hitting situation, whether it's lefty or righty. So I think he's a real interesting variable to this season.
And with the reduced bench size too, you don't have to pinch hit someone else for, you know, for your catcher and then put him in. He can do both roles, which always helps.
Yeah, for sure.
And go ahead. Sorry.
So I was going to say, with Steele being a switch hitter and how he performed this fall too, and also his experience at Samford, I think it's going to be very hard to keep him out of that lineup, because of just how Gabe likes to work and likes to have the lefty righty matchups. When, you know, he hasn't really, you know, Foster was a switch hitter a couple years ago. Was there one last year? I don't think so, right?
Trying to remember.
Yeah, I don't think there was. I know there wasn't an everyday guy that was a switch hitter, that's for sure. Right. So just having is a big thing for Gabe.
Talking about Lucas Steele's fall performance, help me with this a little bit, Sonny. He had a 1,001 OPS, you know, did really well. He led the team in hit by pitches with 7. And it feels like there's always guys who just get hit a lot. How much of that is just a function of where you set up in the box and how pitchers try to attack you? And how much of that is a legitimate skill that you can do things to get on base more, like getting hit by pitches?
Hey, man, me and him were coached by the same high school coach, and we were taught to do not move, take that pitch, take it and get hit, because in high school, every single game really matters. So, I think that's a little thing of that. And it's also a bit unlucky, too. You can't – sometimes you just can't control what pitchers are doing. They were probably hitting him, too, because they were tired of him hitting off of him.
He did. I mean, it was something he hit. What was it? He hit 295 in the fall. A couple, you know, four home runs, tied for second on the team in homers. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, the power's there, the switch hitting's there. It's just a matter of how do you fit him in the lineup. It's a good problem to have.
All right, can I do a little exercise here? Let's project 70 games for the season. Okay, so this is postseason included. 70 games, just as an even number. How many do we see Ike behind the plate? How many do we see? Well, let's play it out. Steele, Strickland, Frelick, let's throw him in there, and Ike. How many of the? We'll start with Ike. How many of the 70 do we think Ike catches?
I mean, whatever, 75% to 80%, like that's that's how I see it. Because I mean, that was his routine last year. It was three of every four he was catching. So
yeah.
I mean, maybe 50.
Okay,
and now I think we see Kale more, because Kale is going to be that guy who, if he doesn't start games, he's going to be the one to come in. Say if Ike gets, or Ike's in the outfield or something, or whatever happening, and he comes in because they really believe in Kale's defense. I mean, I do too. I like watched him play behind the plate. And with Steele and then Frelick, it's just a toss-up, because Steele, if he's hitting, he's going to have to be either DH or outfield, or, you know, they're going to find a spot for him.
Yeah.
So do you have Kale as the primary backup to Irish, but like Steele rotates in if they pinch hit for Strickland and things like that? Like, you see in Strickland's defense is good enough where he's going to be in the lineup if Ike's not behind the plate.
Yeah. Coach Thompson wants somebody to come in there and control the game, just like Ike does. And I mean, just, that's just how Kale's defense is. It's that good. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to put the guy who he's got the most confidence in behind the plate, which when somebody's coming in off the bench, you got to have that guy who's ready to go.
And you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of offense too, if you've got, and that's not to say anything against Kale. I mean, he's going to have his spots, and he hit fine in spots last year, but your catcher doesn't have to be your top, you know, 2, 3, 4 hitter on your team either. If he's holding it down behind the plate, then, you know, he can hit 240 or 230 and you're okay.
Yeah.
And on that note, I think Strickland caught 20% of base runners last year. Wasn't charged with an error. I mean, he is legitimately a difference maker back there. I don't know if his arm's as good as like Nate LaRue's was, right? But you know, Nate was a pitcher too. But that's a situation. Obviously, he's additive back there, and you get enough value out of him without him hitting 400. You know, whatever you get out of him is extra. I want to say 45 games, 45 to 50 for Ike. I do think, if you make a run through Omaha, it's that number goes up, because you're probably going to, with the rest that you get, you're going to want him back there every day. But it does really feel like, you know, a standard normal season, 45 to 50 for Ike is kind of where I am, probably on the lower end of where Sonny is. And then Kale and Steele, probably an even number, but oftentimes those are going to be in the same game. Right.
Yeah.
I love my numbers. 80% of 70 is exactly 56.
Okay.
And that's a full regular season.
Yeah. So if you're talking about a 56 game regular season or so, then probably in that 45 range. And then once you get to the postseason, you're not keeping him out from behind the play. He's not, you know, he's in there.
Yeah. That'd be the only time when he would be catching every single day throughout the whole, like a full regional, you know. A full super, and then all the way to Omaha, which I truly believe this team will go to Omaha.
I love it.
It makes a lot of sense, and I'm sure a lot of listeners love the fact that you're saying that too.
Yeah.
Quick corollary on the catching count for Ike Irish.
Corollary.
How many games do you think he gets in the outfield? Because if you look at the roster right now, there are four full-time outfielders on the roster. A couple other guys with versatility. You know, Brandon McCraney is listed as an infielder, outfielder. You know, Steele has outfield, Ike has outfield, but four full-time outfielders. So how many starts does Ike get out there versus DHing on that off day?
I think it really depends on if your outfielders are, like, if you got three outfielders who are raking, you're not going to throw him out. You just put him in the DH because that would give him even better rest.
Yeah.
The good thing about the DH is that that's so interchangeable, and Gabe does like using a lot of different guys in the DH role, so which is good. He gives guys chances. So it just depends. Like if you got an outfielder who's really good at defense and the bat's not producing, that's where he'll, you know, to fill in and rotate. But it's, I mean, I really do think they got about 15 guys who can play and who will get a chance.
Between the infield and the outfield,
Yes.
Yeah. No, Bristol Carter, Cade Ballou. Does Bub Terrell get the first look, or does Chris Rember get the first look in the other outfield spot? Is whoever's not in center, are they in left or in right? Great. These are all great questions for opening weekend.
Yeah.
I feel like at home, you're putting whoever that third guy is, you're putting him in left, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're asking above Terrell, hey, this is a smaller lift from a defensive perspective to adjust. I mean, even Chris Stanfield, who had fantastic range, he started off in left, partly out of deference to Cason Howell, but partly because the adjustment to college isn't always that easy. I'm really curious about who ends up being the guy in center field. Is it Cade Ballou? Is it Bristol Carter? That, to me, I feel like they're almost interchangeable. Obviously, they're not going to treat them like that. You're going to pick, you know, it's probably weird for Butch to have to pick a center fielder now because he had so long, you could just do it with the same guy. But they're probably playing almost every day, and then you're mixing in that third guy. That's where I think you'll see Ike some. You'll see Rembert in left. I know Butch has been on the record saying he wants him at second base or left. Get him in the lineup whenever they can. Yeah. I think Bub will be a platoon guy. But that third spot feels like if you're going to rotate anywhere, it's going to be that third outfield spot.
Yeah. Bristol and Cade are such different physical builds, too.
Yeah.
And yet they both play such a good center field and could both hit leadoff, too, which is which is interesting. The idea of Cade Ballou at the top of that lineup is really interesting.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yes. It's different, though, because for, you know, other than last year, for five straight years, you had to – or was Cason there last year?
Not last year, no.
Yeah, it was Chris.
It was Chris last year. So other than last year, for five straight years, Gabe had to put number five, Howell, in the lineup somewhere and put an eight next to his name. So,
yeah.
And obviously with Stanfield going to LSU, now it's like, okay, we got to find an everyday guy because you need an everyday center fielder, same guy. You need, because just like shortstop, a center fielder runs the outfield just the same way a shortstop runs the infield.
Here is Cade, 26 starts, 38 games. He hit .284. 426 on base, 632 slug. So, you know, eight homers, stole four bags and five attempts. I mean, he's flashed power, he's flashed speed, and it's just one of those in his second year, can he put it all together? And if he can, then, hey, you've got two everyday players, and like Brad said, one of the most dynamic center field options or leadoff options you probably have seen in quite a while on this team.
Ball just explodes off of his bat. It's amazing. The smoothness of his swing and the explosion of that ball coming off the bat is it'll get your attention. Like I think about a casual fan who's just kind of hanging out and, you know, maybe they're paying attention, maybe they're talking to somebody, and then he swings and makes contact, really pure contact. It'll get your attention. It'll stop what you're doing.
On the Bub Terrell note, something that we didn't get to this in the infield section, but it all dovetails in here. Some of the pre-MLB draft scouting stuff that I was reading and talking to some MLB scouts about, he got really good reviews for his defense at first base in high school. The expectation, right, is Cooper is probably an everyday player. If he misses some time or they just want to give him a DH day or whatever, is there a possibility that Bub gets to play some first base? If your outfield's already kind of locked in, you can put him there? Or is this, you still think it's going to be a mostly work him into the outfield in that third spot?
You could definitely put him there. I mean, when I'm out there taking grandmas and stuff, Bub's over at first base working too. He's working infield and outfield. And so I think they got to have a good problem of where they can have different guys come fill in for Coop. If Coop has a DH day, like you said, or he has to miss a few games here and there. It's like, obviously Frelick can move over to first base too. And
I can play some over there too.
Yeah. I can play a little first base too. And so I think you're gonna see that's gonna be where you're gonna see Bub get his you know, his trial, I guess, and see how he goes.
He's
a good defender at first base. I like what I saw from that.
Yeah. All right. So kind of as we're wrapping up here, give me the three players you think come off the field the least in 2025 as far as defense goes. Who are the three that are probably in that same spot every single game?
So we're not talking about – so this is not like Ike Irish, he's going to move around, but he's in the lineup. You're asking same spot most games throughout the year.
Same spot most games. Give me your three.
I mean, I think you're definitely going to see Eric, Coop, and Ike. Like, that's going to be the solid ground.
Coop's going to rotate. I'm sorry. Ike's going to rotate a lot. So he's probably not – and he's probably getting the number of games, one position. Okay. Yeah.
That throws a wrench into that question. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Who is that every day? He's at the same spot in the, you know, on the field every day guy. I do think Eric Snow's one at short.
Yeah. I think Snow, I think Cooper McMurray.
Yeah.
And I think whoever, and I think center field, I don't know.
Whoever. That's hard. It's like going on the record with who you think it could be. I think it's Cade, right? I think Cade Blue is going to be the guy in center field. And he's going to be out there every single day, right? Like Bristol Carter, incredibly impressive. Had a great, good first year at ECU. But I feel like Cade knows that ballpark. He knows that outfield already. I've got him as that third, but it's a tough question. Like it really is. Yeah. Who is that third guy behind? Is it Guevara maybe at third?
Yeah, could be. He's strong. I mean, he's he's got the kind of the stamina, and now that the brace is off and his mobility is back, you know, I think about Cooper Weiss last year coming in from Miami of Ohio. He was able to handle the transition to the SEC, and it was out there almost every game defensively. We've had some guys in the past maybe that came up from not power conferences, and maybe it was a little tougher to make that transition. So. Yeah, maybe at this point, because Cade Ballou has played a season in the SEC, he knows what that's like. I think I'll go with that too. So I'll go Eric Snow at short, Cooper McMurray at first, and Cade Ballou in center. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still a little jumpy to do that, but I'll go ahead out there too.
That's such a hard question because the first week or two or 3 weeks, like guys are in and out and seeing what guys got. And so like, that is a very, very hard question. But
if it helps, last year, the three positions were first base, shortstop, and center field. Those were the only two positions where there were three people played 52 games. That was it. Nobody else even I think broke 50.
Middle of the field defense and anchor at first. Yep. And that's what you gotta have.
You have to have it. Yeah.
Makes total sense. Folks, another episode of the Barn Baseball show. We are back next week. We're going to talk some pitching. May have a special guest from the coaching staff as well. May even do that in Plainsman Park. Kind of, show you some of the new improvements and stuff as well. In the meantime, do us a favor. TheBarnAuburn.com. You can sign up now. $25 off annual subscription. Tell your friends. We're over here talking Auburn baseball a couple days a week with, frankly, what could not be a better panel, and me. So until next time, for Brad, for Sonny, I'm Lindsay. This has been the Barn Baseball Show.